I actually studied art. I studied classical arts, and then I studied art in the university. And somehow, like trying to find jobs to work because nobody wants to hire an artist, I discovered marketing and social media. And through that way, I got to start working with Love is Bitcoin. And through Love is Bitcoin, I got to know Pablo, who is with Silvia. They are a married couple, and they are the owners from Panties for Bitcoin. So I started working with them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. We are here this evening, and I say evening because you could see how dark it is here. Pardon the not so great lighting. With Flo, she is joining us from Portugal, Lisbon in Portugal, but she is from Chile. Her full name is Florencia Montoya. She is a Bitcoin artist. She's based in Chile, as I said. She works with Love is Bitcoin, which is a Bitcoin publication. She also works with Panties for Bitcoin. And today, as I said, she's coming to us from Portugal. She's on her way to the city of Madeira, where I think Bitcoin Atlantis will be held this weekend from March 1st to March 3rd. I'm a bit jealous. A bunch of people that I know have reached out to me and asked if I was coming. Obviously, I can't make it. So it is what it is. That's my introduction, Flo. Let me hand the mic over to you. Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey Frank, I'm so happy to be here. Well, I think you got it all. I've been a Bitcoin artist from 2020. I actually studied art. I studied classical arts, and then I studied art in the university. And somehow, like trying to find jobs to work because nobody wants to hire an artist, I discovered marketing and social media. And through
Cool.
that way, I got to start working with Love is Bitcoin. And through Love is Bitcoin, I got to know Pablo, who is with Silvia. They are a married couple, and they are the owners from Panties for Bitcoin.
Cool.
So
Very,
I
very cool.
started working with them.
Nice. I was actually going to start with the macroeconomic outlook on Chile and all that, but let's get micro first. You're on your way to Madeira for Bitcoin Atlantis, and I think you have some of your artwork with you that you'll be auctioning. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm super happy about this piece. It's actually I got the inspiration last year. I had the opportunity to go to Bitcoin Amsterdam, and I went to the museum and I saw this classical painting of this very beautiful, very angry swan protecting his nest. And this painting had it was like from the 100 like very old painting. And then, sorry, I'm not good at seeing
It's
the
good.
years.
It's good.
You can do your research.
100 years old, maybe? Like it was over 100 years old. Is that it? Yeah. Okay. You could
And
say it if
then
you want to
at
say it in Spanish, I could translate if you want to speak some Spanish.
1500.
Oh, so like 1500 years old. Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
And then it at some point someone took it and like re-symbolized it, and it went from being like this very threatened creature to a protecting one. And I really like that. And I took it as a symbol of the hodlers. Like I saw this and I was thinking like this animal is protecting the future. Like it only lives to protect his eggs, and that's what we're doing. And so this new drawing is an homage to the hodlers, and I hope they like it.
Awesome. If you could, maybe you can send me an image afterwards and I can have that pop up as we're speaking. I think I've seen what you're talking about online. I think I've seen you post it and it's very, very cool. So if you've heard that and you're at Bitcoin Atlantis, you know which painting you're going to, contribute some money to the auction for. So go check it out for sure. One of the things I love to do, since the focus of this podcast is interviewing people from around the world, talking to them a little bit about what's happening in their homelands, in their home countries, and what, you know, how Bitcoin is helping or not helping or whatever. Let's start with a little bit of a macroeconomic outlook in Chile. So I think it was last year, I do remember reading about some, I think what were violent protests in the country. People were upset about things like rising transportation, I think, like the devaluation of their pensions. I think student loans even, and a bunch of other issues. So are these same issues still a thing there? Are people still upset about these things? Start there.
Well, those protests actually were in 2019. So right before the pandemic, no problem. But it was like really like a lot. And of course, yeah, you were right. Like it was about everything getting more expensive and people not getting more value. Nobody thought about the currency getting devalued. So they, of course, thought this was the government and the rich people stealing from the poor or whatever. This got like people were super angry. And yeah, in Chile, we have a lot of inequity. Like there is a lot of difference between the rich and the poor. So we have a lot of things to improve. And yeah, it was very, very violent. And it got only stopped because of the pandemic. I think that the pandemic actually was very good timing for the government that was in power at that moment, because otherwise I don't know if they would have been able to finish their period. And then we had elections. And the president that we have right now is only president because of this protest. And he was like protesting also on part of this movement. And now we have a like very, very socialist government. Like they are promising all this stuff, like your pensions are going to be better and everything. And of course, free stuff and all. Very, very friend. I don't know if they're communists, but they're like very, very good friends with the Communist Party, so that's like the ideology of them. And I don't know. I mean, they have been in power like 2 years now or something, so not everything can be blamed onto them. Like this is a long process. And I think Chile had like a good moment, like there was like more money or something, and now we are starting to see like they have consume everything like they always do. And I think people are starting to struggle more and think things are getting really, really, like you can see it. Like, for example, if you compare the Chilean peso with the dollar, like the dollar is very, very high, like at maybe an all-time high or very close to that. So our money is devaluating like all the time. Yeah. A lot.
Yeah, this is a common common theme amongst people who I speak with, especially Latin America, Africa, Southeast Asia. The problem, you know, now is that when money gets devalued this drastically, it tends to wake a lot of people up. Some people, like yourself, turn to Bitcoin. So they think, okay, here's this money that can't be devalued. It's still volatile when we price it in fiat currencies, but it is a solution to some problems that related to economics and finance. So for people who, like yourself, who are now starting to turn to Bitcoin in Chile, given that they're sort of facing financial hardships, how are they getting exposure to Bitcoin? Meaning, if they don't have a lot of discretionary income to go out and buy a bunch of Bitcoin, how are they actually getting some of it to help them out?
Yeah, I think this happens very organically. Like, I really don't know how you find Bitcoin, but it's happening now. Like, I think that many people say that you came to Bitcoin because number go up or something like that. I think that's when you are like more privileged to, in financially privileged, I mean, like. Yeah. But when you are in Latin America or countries like this, I think you discover Bitcoin because of the use case. This was the case for my family back when we first knew this. And I say my family because this was like the whole family discovering Bitcoin, and my dad is a hardcore Bitcoiner and everyone in the family. And now in Chile, I started to see more like the other day, I don't know how it's called, but in some streets, when like in the weekends, you can go in the street and you can go like buy your like groceries and vegetables and stuff like that. Uh-huh. So in
farmers,
those kind of
farmers
places,
market, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. Uh-huh.
Okay.
So
you say, I'm curious, is it like a feria, something like this, like mm-hmm. In Spanish? So it's like a feria would be like a market, an open marketplace. We would call something like that, like a farmer's market or something. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like very not like less with less control, you know? So okay. Sometimes they don't even pay the taxes, or
right.
They do, but when they want to. And I saw there was like a lady selling, I don't know what, tomatoes, and she accepted like credit card, debit card, Bitcoin, everything. And that was very new for me. Like that kind of things are, you are starting to see those kind of things. So I guess it's getting there, but
okay.
Yeah.
So literally getting exposure to it from actually being paid in it. So somebody is, you know, they're learning about it from somebody, and then they're learning the ways to accept it and transact with it, which is quite fascinating. Please tell us a little bit about how you came to find it, and then also how you came to find your place within the Bitcoin industry.
So at the beginning, well, like many people, I heard about it, like someone told me about it, and I was like, what is this? This has no sense. Like, where is it in the internet? I don't understand this. Magic internet money, bye. And in the family, we were like, of course, this is a Ponzi, like, of course, and
yeah.
Dismissed it. And like a couple of years later, like, I guess my dad, it kind of, it was still in his mind somewhere. And then he saw it again, and he was like, let me check it again. And then at some point he said like, okay, now there is some infrastructure here, so maybe this is a legit stuff. And he started studying. I was studying arts at the moment. This was about 2017, maybe. I remember it was the block size war, like that time. And so my dad was studying it a lot, and he said like, okay, if they win the block size war, I think we can trust this stuff. So he was like
wow.
Waiting, like, let me see what happens. And my brother was already in university, and he was studying software engineer. So he was like, oh, this school is really, this stuff is really cool. Like, and then, so we got over this block size war. We had like a tiny, tiny flirting with shitcoins, but only for a tiny, tiny moment. My dad, I think he didn't. Like, he was like super, I don't know how he was like, no. yeah. But okay, a dark past there. And then we got Bitcoin only, and my dad made a test. So he's been working for the same company for like 20 years. It's a German company. So we were used to having this problem of having to move money from another country around the world and whatever. And he said like, okay, I'm going to like cut my salary in two. I'm going to bring one half with Bitcoin and the other through the banking system, as I always have done. And the one with Bitcoin came in 1 second. Like, it was much faster. You didn't need to talk to anybody. You didn't need to think about like, oh, it's Saturday, you can't move money until Monday, or
yeah.
Stuff like that. And he actually gave himself like a 10% raise only by choosing Bitcoin. So it was like, okay, now we're never going to use traditional banking again. Actually, the bank later, a couple of years later, threw him away, and one day decided and closed his account and was like, no, you're sending money to an exchange. You're no. And we had to like do a process to get the money that we had in the account. And yeah, it's very, only like, I don't know if it's a word, unilateral, like from only from their side.
Yep. Yeah, unilateral. Somebody there made a decision and that was it. There was no discussion or debate. Yeah. Okay.
A bank that we had been using for more than 20 years. It was like, like never a debt, never like always a responsible customer. It was no, you are doing stuff with cryptos, buy. Yeah, that was a problem for a moment, but then we got over them.
Wild. So I'm going to just give a little bit of, we'll do a little, it's like a teachable moment here. The block size war, which Flo was referring to, happened back in, I think it started maybe late 2016, but it was a really big issue in 2017. And this related to the size of the blocks that the Bitcoin blockchain produced. And bigger blocks would have made it harder for people to run a node, which would have centralized the network more, but it would have made the network faster. Smaller blocks made it easier for people to run a node, but it makes the network a little bit slower, slower, I think, is the bigger blocks would have just made it faster, but more centralized. So I'm amazed. You're the first person, the first person I've ever interviewed who's told me that their parents were the one sort of doing the research on this sort of technical level stuff. I only got into Bitcoin in January of 2018. So I learned about the block size war in retrospect, but I can, you know, if I were new to it then, I don't know that I would have taken that much of a deep dive. So props to your father. That's amazing. I'm amazed that he was so interested in it. And also that he waited to see who won the war, not just thinking like, okay, let's see what happens here. We'll just put some money in, whatever. And for those who don't know, we got the outcome that we wanted. Bitcoin remained with smaller blocks, as I may have just said. But really, really fascinating. That's amazing that your whole family is into it too. I think that's probably helpful on an emotional level, because I'm sure there are plenty of people out there who get into Bitcoin, their families think they're insane and, you know, or, you know, ask them to come back to join them in reality or something like that. So it's very cool that your family's into it as well. I'm sure that's helpful on some level, that you support each other with this stuff. Your story is also quite interesting in that I'm learning more and more about people who are debanked for multiple reasons, just sending money to a crypto exchange, especially if there were no warnings on the account saying like, hey, you can't send money here, or we don't allow this. Making what you just called a unilateral decision to say you don't have a bank account anymore, especially when you have a history with that bank, is just crazy. There's, you know, it's just an absolutely crazy situation. Another thing that you've touched on, I heard you talking about this in a previous interview. You are a woman in the space, and Bitcoin and, you know, even the broader crypto space, it's sort of known as like, you have like the crypto bros or the dudes that are into Bitcoin. So why do you, what challenges have you faced as a woman, and why do you think it's important to get more people, more women involved in the space?
Why am I a crypto dude? Because I like them. Yeah, we are a family of nerds. We are all together here. Like, we are going together. My sister brought her husband. My brother is with her girlfriend. Like, yeah.
I love it.
I think that, I don't know. I think that maybe it's true that sometimes we as women in some places feel less encouraged towards technology. Like, I don't believe in this, like, maybe feminism, like how they're using this information, but okay, it doesn't mean it's not true somehow. For my case, I don't want to speak like for other people, but for me it was like that. It was like, and still today, like, I struggle a lot with technology. Like, I'm always afraid, like, I always break stuff, like, I touch the computer and it's like and yeah, I feel like I don't like technology doesn't like me that much. So I'm very blessed. Like, I'm only here because of my family. Like, I learned through like osmosis. Like, they were, because at that time we used to live all together in the house, and we used to have dinner every day together on most of the days of the week. So for like a year or something, every dinner was like Bitcoin. So it was like impossible not to learn about it, you know?
Wow.
And then when I was like, okay, this is like, my curiosity is like very, very awakened, they were like, okay, now you read the books. So I started reading, and I actually started later on doing the art, like only in 2020. It like made like more sense to me. And I realized it may have not even made sense back then. Like, it was like, maybe art is the only way I can understand this. I can, and I'm still learning about it, you know. And it's like, each piece I make, I'm focused. I'm more interested in how this is going to shape society. I'm never going to learn how to code. I'll never understand, like, I need help for everything, like to run my node. And I'm this silly person that forgets the password. Like, I'm not a good Bitcoiner, but I try my best.
Interesting. We need all types in this space. And I think people like you are particularly important because there's a lot of other people like you. And whatever ways you can figure out, whatever analogies you can create through your art or ways you can transmit information visually to people, it's a role that you play. I think everybody does have a role to play, and they're, you know, we all have to sort of demonstrate our understanding of this in our own ways. So we need the people like you out there just as much as we need your dad studying, you know, the block size wars as they happened and helping you out with your node maybe. But yeah, that's totally cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that's why in my case I was only lucky, and now for me, like I said, it's like I'm interested in how this is going to shape society, how this changes. I hope that I can make projects in the future where I mix the art with a teaching project so that people can learn about Bitcoin. Like I'm interested in how this can help us. Like, I understand that part of it.
Yeah, it's awesome. That's really, really cool. Yeah, very, very cool. You do a lot of work with Love is Bitcoin, which is a Bitcoin publication. I'll link to the website in the show notes. I think you're behind their social media account, which is quite an active social media account. So could you talk a little bit about that work, and also how you're sort of practically applying your skills? You said in the beginning, you know, I got into art, then I realized, you know, I could actually translate some of these skills into marketing. So how has that process, what has that process been like?
Yeah, well, in Love is Bitcoin, like, there is a group of people and I get a lot of help, but I think I'm getting better with my meme technique. I don't know.
Cool. Yeah.
I have a lot of fun. I really like it because it's always talking about new Bitcoin companies and what people are building from their own expertise, and always having fun, always trying to put it in simple words, to be playful, to be like an open invitation for people. That's at least like my perspective, how I try to manage it. And I also believe it's how the focus of the group is there. Just being silly and embracing this silliness, and like, everyone is invited, because Bitcoin is not like one characteristic, like only smart people is going to be into it. No, everyone can be into Bitcoin. Bitcoin is for enemies, like they say. So it's an invitation. So it's been very fun.
Cool. That's cool. Yeah, I get the feeling just through the account that you very much not only enjoy what you do, but appreciate the fact that you have the opportunity to do what you do. I don't know if that's a fair way to put it, but it seems like your enthusiasm shines through, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it all the months I've been there, and I've learned a lot, and the team has been super supportive with me, with my art, and also like, helping me get my, because I have had to learn to be more like outgoing. Like, I'm not like Livy, the character in that account, like personally. Mm. I'm like more like, if we meet like in real life, I can be like silly and have fun and all, but in social media, I'm not that outgoing, you know? So, I had struggled in the past, like, I want people to see my art and getting to like more people to know it. And this has taught me. I also thought that I couldn't. I always thought I couldn't even do a podcast in English. Like, no, this is my second language. How am I going to do this? And it was like, no, I have a strong accent. And the team was like, who cares? Let's go for it. And now I'm like, okay, let's do it. Having fun with it and enjoying it.
Yeah. So it's been cool. I want to pause to acknowledge that I used to be a language teacher. I taught immigrants in New York, taught them English for about 10 years and taught abroad as well. I actually started teaching English in Latin America and Venezuela. Amazing. Your English is great. You're doing an amazing job. Super impressive. It's really, really great. And also, I think there's an amazing lesson to be learned from the way you're describing your journey, not just to Bitcoin, because I think yours is very unique. I don't know a lot of people who sat around their dinner table discussing Bitcoin. That's very, very unique. But the way that you got into the industry, I think, is the way that a bunch of people who are more creative did, including myself. You sort of have to figure out any little gap you might be able to fill, any little place you might be able to apply your skills, and you just do it. Somebody yesterday, someone in the press asked me, like, what advice would you give to someone who's looking to get into this world, into this industry? And I said, just start doing whatever you do without getting paid for it or whatever. You want to write, start a newsletter, start a blog, do whatever, and then see who you can work with. Sorry, everybody, we got disconnected for a second there. I think that was on my end, so my apologies. But what I was saying is that it's really not easy to get into this industry. It's quite challenging, to be honest. Someone, I was at PubKey, which is a Bitcoin bar based in New York City. And someone said to me, I was taking notes because I was writing about something that was happening at the bar for one of my jobs. And they said, like, oh, can you get me a job in Bitcoin? And I was there at one point too. I was asking people the same question. It's a really tough, a lot of people want to work in this space. It's a really tough place to make like a really simple, easy living in. So you have to hustle. You have to work for multiple companies and, you know, do things for multiple outlets. But if you really love it, I think the satisfaction will triumph the fact that maybe you don't have a steady paycheck or something like that. And, you know, I think what you do in the way that you sort of survive making your own art, working on Love is Bitcoin, working with Panties for Bitcoin, you just sort of figure it out as you go and you just sort of keep going. So even if at first, maybe it's not a full-time job, start doing it part-time or create something. But I think the big lesson to learn is just do what you do, whether you're getting paid to do it or not at first. Put your message out there into the world and maybe you'll start to find the right people that will help you out. Is that a fair way to, is that fair advice to give to people?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Everyone has their own talent. Like, don't try to figure what others might need, like try to figure how can you bring your talent and your knowledge to the space. That's actually the story of Panties for Bitcoin. Many people ask it because it's like, why are you guys making panties? Like, what meme is this that I don't know? and the thing is, like, Pablo and his family, because it's a family business, they have always been in the underwear industry. They are from Argentina. At some point, with all the things that have happened in Argentina in the past, they decided to move to Canada. So they continue in the underwear industry. And at some point, Pablo found out he had like a very serious illness. And he was like taking a moment off work, like, I have to fight this illness. And at that moment, he already knew about Bitcoin, but it was like, this is a very good time for me to study more and to get deep into this. And he was like so deep into Bitcoin. He said, like, if I get to beat this illness, I want to only work for Bitcoin. Like, I don't want to work for anything else. That nothing else makes sense for me. Like, I need to work like for my family and for Bitcoin. And he, thank God, got over this illness. And he then said, like, okay, I make panties. Like, how am I going to apply this to Bitcoin? Like, I have this promise, like, I made to myself. And now it's like, I don't know how to code. I don't know how to make a hardware wallet. And he was like, well, I am Panties for Bitcoin. I went, why not? And he started building the brand, and it was so cool because people like loved it. And when you meet him and his family, they are so like very nice people, and they you get the story and so cool. And the like the company is built upon this like idea of family, Bitcoin and quality, and you can sense that. And that's so Bitcoiner, and it's applying what he knows. Like, he already has like the best knowledge of the materials and the fabrics and everything. Like, why not apply that to Bitcoin?
I love it. And I think that's another great suggestion. That same night, that's another great point that you're making. That same night that I was just talking about when someone said, hey, can you get me a job in Bitcoin? The people at the bar that night, it was a bigger meetup. We had Peter McCormack from What Bitcoin Did was there, and James Seyfert, who is the writer from Bloomberg, who has been covering the Bitcoin ETFs. He was there speaking as well. And I think it was him or Peter said something. I think it was Peter who said, you know, be the Bitcoin person for whatever you do. Meaning, like, if you work in this industry, do something related to that industry, which, you know, it's exactly the story that you just told. And I think that that really is the message here. If you want to do it, think about what your strengths are. Do that. I mean, for me, I was a writing teacher. I used to be a music journalist. So I decided to start writing about it. And it's led to a bunch of different things. And it's been great. Has it been easy? No, it was much easier to be a public school teacher or something like that. Has it been fun? Do I get to meet great people like Flo? Absolutely. And I think that that's really the big part. That's the reward here. I wanted to touch base. I actually, before this interview was scheduled, I actually thought Flo was from Greece, which is really funny because she's, I think, because Love is Bitcoin is based in Greece. And I see her promoting this Bitcoin halving party in Santorini, the Greek island. So could you tell us a little bit about that? And also, I'm assuming you'll be heading there for the party, right? You'll be going to the island?
No, me, myself, oh. No, it's so far away. I would love to. No, that's when we have to remember that Livy is a character.
Yep. And
I wish I was going there. The team has been working super hard to make this an incredible experience. And what I love most about it is that many people that have bought the tickets is telling us, like, this is the first Bitcoin event that I can go with my wife or with my spouse. Like, because a conference like that, like, sometimes gets a bit intimidating and it's like, no, that might be too boring. Like, it's too much. But this thing is like, it has like the fun element. So maybe this is the way to orange peel your significant others because, you never know. And we're planning like a lot of things. Like, of course, there will be some talks and things like that, but we will have like so much fun. There is a boating accident on a yacht, a pool party with pizza, okay. And this change world video games. Yep. And a lot of activities going down there. Yeah.
I think, there's a lesson to be learned there too. We should not just make Bitcoin events about nerdy technical talk and stuff like that. Games and fun stuff is a good addition as well. So that sounds like a lot of fun. So I know you'll be at Bitcoin Atlantis, which sounds really exciting. Do you have any other plans to travel this year? Will you be at any other conferences or?
I will try to go to another one, but Chile is really far away.
Yes.
Like you wouldn't know, like it's really hard to get out of there. And we have like a crazy natural borders and like people don't know how long that country is. It's like really hard to. Yeah, like you see the drawing and then I have you seen how long it is like compared to like, I don't know, Europe. It like crosses like the whole, it's crazy. Like, it's not easy getting out of there. But I want to try to go to Nashville maybe, but we'll see, hopefully.
Okay, that's cool. Very, very cool stuff. I appreciate you sharing everything you did today. I think the main takeaway here is, I think the work you're doing is amazing. I truly admire your hustle. I admire your enthusiasm. And I hope that everyone listening sort of gets a bit inspired to go out there and contribute whatever it is. I don't know, you know, it sounds cheesy, but like whatever your heart tells you to contribute to the space. I think one of the things about Bitcoin that a lot of people miss, especially if you're not really in the space, I'll say particularly if you're not in the space, is that it's one of the reasons I named this channel what it's called, New Renaissance Capital. I think the Renaissance aspect, the fact that Bitcoin draws in people from the worlds of technology, science, art, literature, it draws in all different types. And I really think when you're in the presence of all these types, it really has this feeling of a new Renaissance. So take part in that. See what you can offer. Everybody can offer something. I believe that wholeheartedly, especially after having taught for 12 years and worked with people on various levels. And I think that Flo is a great example and inspiration for doing that, for getting out there and just putting yourself out there. And again, if you're listening to this, English is probably your first language. You don't even have to do it in a second language, and she's doing it in her second language. So take that as a, don't make any excuses. Let me go back to you, though. So where can people find your art online? Where can they find you online? All of that stuff.
Yeah, in Twitter, I'm at @FloMontoya_. My website is ungovernable.store. And I have original screen prints and like information of the other stuff. The more slow made drawings that I make, I try to always take them to some like place, like a conference, because I like people like be able to see it in real life and maybe auction them. So that's why I'm bringing this one here. But the screen prints I have available there. Uh-huh.
Cool. And I will link to her store in the show notes. So if you're listening to this, whether the podcast version or if you're watching on YouTube, make sure to check that out. I will. Any final thoughts or anything you want to leave the audience with this evening?
Just go for it. Like, trust in what you know, trust in what like your experience. And it's tricky, but it's also fun, and it's also like very, very rewarding. Like, you're doing this for yourself and for your children, and everything you do like has more meaning. Like, I was working for a skincare company, like that's so superficial and like boring, and now I get to do memes all day. Yeah, so life is right. Better now. But that's great. Yeah, like, well, yeah, trust in yourself.
Yeah, I love that. Actually, one last question. What have been some of the major victories for you? What have been some of the things that made you feel like you're on the right track and you're doing the right thing?
Well, first, like being able to show my work as an artist, that's like an amazing experience. And when people enjoy it, and or even if you don't, like to receive comments from others, like that's always amazing. Like being able to go to the conferences, it's a huge experience for me. Like being able to work for Bitcoin, like getting paid in Bitcoin, that was like a one thing that I wanted to achieve, and now I'm doing it. Of course, it presents other problems, but it's amazing. And yeah, I don't know, like connecting to people, like this invitation, for example, that this is to be able to talk to you and different people. And yeah, that's also amazing.
Yeah, very cool. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Please check out Flo's work, follow her online, and please have a blast in Madeira for all of us that were listening who can't be there. We're all very jealous. And we appreciate you taking the time to come talk to us this evening. So thank you very much, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much. Bye.